It's time for overtime.
Stop what you're doing and listen.
In the world of sports, it's all about the playmakers in today's headlines, from locals to the pros, with interviews from local standouts and sports all-stars across the country that will have you talking.
He'll shoot and he hits it at the buzzer.
Hear from coaches to players, sports analysts, and broadcasters who are a part of the action every day. Overtime, now with Bert Ramin on ESPN 102.3 AM 1000 KSOO, Sioux Falls sports leader.
Welcome in to the Tuesday, May 19th edition of Overtime. My goodness, there is one place to start, one person to talk about, and a series that has been turned on its head, the San Antonio Spurs, and a otherworldly performance from Victor Wembanyama. No longer just a great name, cool name to say, but Wemby, the best player in the NBA, a generational talent, no doubt about it. 41 points, 24 rebounds, 3 blocks, and a signature moment to begin the Western Conference Finals last night. 122-115, double overtime, as the Spurs and the Thunder, a rare postseason loss, a rare home postseason loss, and has a lot of people scratching their heads saying, you know what? Maybe it's the Spurs that are the team to beat in this postseason, not the defending champion Oklahoma City Thunder. And if you're a Thunder fan, maybe you're starting to think, you know that dynasty we were building? You know that 2 in a row, 3 in a row, 4 in a row, nobody can stop us. We're so much head and shoulders better than everybody. Maybe that's not going to come to fruition. Maybe the Thunder will be a team like the Milwaukee Bucks in recent memory, like the Denver Nuggets in recent memory, that are really darn good, but a one-title team. We'll wait and see as the Victor Wembanyama-led Spurs certainly exposed OKC in a little bit of a way last night, but more so it was the Victor Wembanyama show. 41 points, 24 rebounds, and a lot to recap. In that one, Dylan Harper stepping up in a big way, 24, 11, and 6, and a 61 to 40 rebounding margin advantage for San Antonio in that game one win. Wemby stating his case for the future face of the NBA, and the latest news in the NBA coming up here shortly. NFL talk, college football, including big concern for the Iowa State Cyclones. We'll dive into that coming up later on in hour one. Also headlines, some of the best free agent names still out there. Tyreek Hill, Stephon Diggs, and so many more. And where they might fit in the weeks ahead in the NFL offseason. That is hour one. Hour two, headlines and highlights. The NHL Final Four set last night as Montreal, the Canadiens, moving beyond the Buffalo Sabres last night in overtime. Also a thrilling game there. Final Four set in the NHL. Odds roundup for the NBA and NHL. We follow that up with the good, the bad, the ugly, which we typically do at the end of the show, but a different tenor today as we round out the show with one of our favorites, Darren Wolfson of KSTP out in the Twin Cities, talking Wolves, talking Wild, future prognosis for the two teams. We'll dive right in. Darren Wolfson coming up around 12:40 this afternoon on the show. Let's go ahead and get right into the NBA and the shot heard round the world last night. The Spurs were down 3 with 30 seconds to go in the first overtime period, and this absurdity happened from near the midcourt logo for Victor Wembanyama.
Spurs got numbers hungry down behind the plane. 5-on-4. Wemby's going to pull a deep 3.
Oh my goodness. A logo shot.
28-footer. Ties it at 108.
Ties it at 108. In the end, it was a 122-115 double overtime win for San Antonio. If you haven't seen that bucket, you got to see it to believe it. The dude that's 7'3", 7'4", 7'5", maybe even 7'6", Victor Wembanyama, jacking it up from way downtown. Not a whole lot of pressure on him, but that is an absurdly difficult shot to make, except for everybody but Caitlin Clark and Steph Curry. You can add Victor Wembanyama to that list. The dude has an unreal range, barely has to jump to put it through the cylinder when he's underneath the basket, and certainly a big signature moment, part of a huge win in game one for the Spurs, 122 to 115. Wemby's coach, Mitch Johnson, talking about the special performance in game one.
I thought his level of physicality and execution through physicality was tremendous. His rebounding obviously shows itself in the box score, but was off the charts defensively. He was in a stance almost all night, and I thought he did a good job of, and the guys along with him, just being stubborn in terms of they made some shots, and they did, obviously, you got to give up something when you try to take things away, and at times when they made shots or they made us pay for whatever we were trying to do, we stuck with it, and he led the way. I mean, that's 49 big minutes, and it was high level for the majority of those.
Absolutely true. A 1-0 lead for San Antonio. That's Spurs head coach Mitch Johnson. Chris Canty saying Victor Wembanyama could soon join a very exclusive list and club.
There are very few players in the history of the NBA that we would say skipped steps when it comes to contending and winning a championship. Bill Russell, Kareem Abdul-Jabbar, Magic Johnson, Larry Bird. That's where we're at. And all of those guys are top 10 players all time. That's where this thing feels like it's trending with Wemby.
It certainly feels like a rocket ship. Good stuff from Mike Wilbon yesterday into today. Here's Wilbon talking about the way that everybody else on the floor and, of course, out there as spectators look at Victor Wembanyama.
When those players on his own team were staring at him in awe late in the game, that clip where he's looking at them and they're all looking back at him. Do you know how many people get that in the history of basketball? It's a real small number, and there's some great players who never got that. It looks like something otherworldly that possesses him now. We're not talking about, it's one of the great games of all time, but the performance, I'm looking at it, and when I'm texting you, it reminds me of things I'd seen in my life, sitting at ringside watching a young Mike Tyson, standing and watching behind the ropes and watching a young Tiger Woods. It reminds me of that, where everyone is in awe of everything he's doing, including the opposition. They don't want to tell you that.
Very well said by Mike Wilbon. More from Wilbon now, talking about just Victor Wembanyama, the player in person.
All year long, I thought and admired the defending champs for playing with a quiet, like a polite ruthlessness. I don't mean an individual, just the team. But Wemby personifies that. He is ruthless. There's a pettiness about it, which is necessary. And maybe that loss hurt him so deeply that he, and this goes back, if we're going to talk about historical comparisons with Russell and Bird and Jordan and Magic and Kobe, they looked at teammates in the locker room. I know this. They looked at guys and said, no, no, you're doing this. Oh, we will fight. Wemby seems to have that gene. I don't care what else the rest of you are doing. I'm not having this disappointment. So maybe that reference would be put to bed. I've been saying it's Russell, it's Magic, it's Tim Duncan. That's the list. Everybody else, Kobe, Shaq, Jordan, LeBron, it took years. Jerry West, it took his whole life. This dude, maybe he's cut from different cloth.
Maybe. I think he is cut from a different cloth. Mike Wilbon there. Great stuff on Victor Wembanyama. The coach of the Thunder, Mark Dagenau, talking about how to game plan for such a physical freak in Victor Wembanyama.
I think, you know, he's a great player with high impact, obviously. And when you play against those players, it's kind of an acquired thing. You know, you like learn it as you go. We've gone through that with other great players where, you develop a feel. You know, you could talk about it as much as you want, but you got to develop a feel for it. I thought we played him in such a condensed period of time. We actually caught a little bit of a groove as we went, earlier in the season. We've got to do that again. Obviously, we have to get better, from this game, but he's a great player, obviously.
And that's Mark Dagenau talking about the opposition, Victor Wembanyama. Jorge Sedano crediting the Spurs defense, specifically on Shai Gilgeous-Alexander, as a big reason for their game one win last night.
Credit the Spurs in general. They did a fantastic job on Shai Gilgeous-Alexander. They kept throwing bodies at him. They didn't give him a lot of breathing room. And, you know, the Lakers kind of gave them a little bit of a blueprint. And, you know, Marcus Smart did a really good job on Shai in the last series. These guys have more guys they can throw at Shai. So it'll be interesting to see how this thing shakes out and what kind of adjustments the Thunder make for game two.
That's Jorge Sedano of ESPN. Game one tonight in the Eastern Conference Finals. Cavs and the Knicks from MSG, 7 o'clock on ESPN. Game one, once again, Knicks are favored by 7.5 points. Here's Brian Windhorst on how the Cavs can possibly slow down Jalen Brunson.
Sometimes the Cavs are very, very good. And man for man, the Cavs are probably more talented than the Celtics. And definitely
that's why I want to know why they aren't better, because they're so good man for man.
Definitely more talented than the 76ers, and their key player isn't Embiid. Embiid, who's coming off of a lumbering game. And the Cavs have had some success against Jalen Brunson. Now, Brunson could score 40 tonight. I am certainly not saying it, but the Cavs did have some, and the Cavs had success against Cade Cunningham in the regular season. Mm-hmm. The Cavs actually have this guy, Dean Wade, who is 6'10", who they will use as a primary defender on Brunson. When Brunson went up against him this year, Brunson struggled a little bit. And I don't even feel comfortable bringing this up because a regular season game versus now is so different. But Dean Wade at 6'10" is the type of defender you put on Jalen Brunson because the length can sometimes bother him.
And again, Game 1 Eastern Conference Finals, Cavs at the Knicks tonight, 7 o'clock on ESPN. I know that last night we are celebrating and lauding a tremendous double overtime Game 1. How about a single overtime Game 7 last night in the NHL? Montreal and Buffalo from Buffalo. It was 2-2 heading into the overtime period, and Alex Newhook of the Canadiens able to play hero.
Had that breakaway chance in overtime. That came close to the line, and Montreal's going to work it out. Carrier ahead. Over the line comes Newhook. Shooting! Scores! Alex Newhook! Olay! 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 And Montreal is going to play Carolina in the Eastern Conference Final.
That audio courtesy of SN Stats, Sportsnet Stats on Twitter as of last night. Certainly a big moment. Alex Newhook, a hero, and a very nice season comes to a close for Buffalo. Really nice season continues for Montreal. Overtime winner, win the series 4-3. Alex Newhook with the game-winning overtime netter. Western Conference Finals, those are set. Golden Knights and Avalanche from Denver, 7 o'clock tomorrow night for Game 1. Colorado, a marginal favorite, minus 190. And then Thursday night, Carolina, a minus 200 favorite. Game 1 against Montreal from Raleigh, 7 o'clock on TNT. Thursday night. A reminder, Friday night, Game 3 and the first opportunity for the Stampede to win the Clark Cup Final in focus. Friday night, 6:10, the start time from Muskegon. Stampede lead the series 2-0 with a best of 5. So one win away. First opportunity to do that. Game 3, Friday night, 6:10, the start time in the Clark Cup Final. Stay up to date, sfstampede.com. Major League Baseball, Guardians continue to stack wins. They beat up Detroit yesterday in Detroit 8-2. Cleveland 27-22, well out ahead of the field so far in the American League Central. Elsewhere, Boston beat Kansas City 3-1. And the Minnesota Twins doubled up the Houston Astros in Game 1 of that series. Eric Orsi earned the win. Kendry Rojas, pretty darn important and impactful in his start yesterday. Here's Derek Shelton, how impressed he was with the youngster's outing.
I thought he was outstanding. I mean, you know, the thing we've seen with Kendry is when he puts the ball on the plate, that he causes issues. And I mean, that's an entirely right-handed lineup except for, you know, two guys, and the one guy's a monster in the middle. And I say that affectionately because he may be the best, one of the top three hitters in baseball. I thought he did a really good job navigating. He threw strikes. Everything was sharp. You know, didn't know what we were going to get out of him. And the fact that we got four out of him, and he threw, what, 49 pitches, that was really impressive.
So Rojas, four innings of work, one walk, three strikeouts. Josh Bell, big game, 3 of 4, two homers and four RBI. But the Minnesota Twins do not come out of the matchup completely unscathed as there was an injury to Ryan Jeffers. Here's Shelty on the latest there.
So left wrist sprain. And he did it on the swing. I really have not talked to him yet, but that was the initial diagnosis, is left wrist sprain.
There you go. That's the latest initial diagnosis, left wrist sprain for Ryan Jeffers. Keep you updated as updates become available there. Other finals, Milwaukee beat their rival Cubbies in Chicago 9-3 yesterday. Chicago still out in front 29-19. Milwaukee now 27-18. Rockies get a home win against the Rangers 7-6. White Sox fall in Seattle 6-1. Astros and Twins do it again from Target Field this evening. 6:40 the start time, 6 o'clock. Pregame coverage right here on the Treasure Island Baseball Network. Aaron Rodgers back with the Pittsburgh Steelers. How predictable was it? Adam Schefter says the Steelers really, truly didn't know.
I know everybody expected that he would be back. He was back in Pittsburgh 10 days ago. But I'm just telling you that talking to the organization over the weekend, until the weekend, they didn't know officially. He had not informed them that he would be returning officially until this past weekend. He had not given them an answer. And so until you have an answer, you don't really know. And my guess is that that sort of filtered around the organization. And as great as he is, as much as we think we're going to see him, and as much as everybody believes he's going to play again under his former head coach in Green Bay, he still had not committed to it. and he let all this time go by. So when all that time goes by, you can talk yourself into a lot of different scenarios about whether he is or isn't coming. Like, well, why hasn't he answered? Well, maybe he's not coming back. And I can just tell you that the organization truly did not know that he was coming back until this past weekend.
That's interesting. A lot of reporting to the contrary of that, but certainly wouldn't surprise based on we're having good conversations, good clean conversations, not a lot of fun. We're having conversations, according to the general manager there, Omar Khan in Pittsburgh, head coach Mike McCarthy. They were waiting a very long time on Aaron Rodgers, and he does show up, signs a deal worth up to $25 million to be the team's QB1 coming up this fall. Now, same division, different story. Peter Schrager talking about a trendy Super Bowl pick that's not in Pittsburgh.
We're saying this in May, but just wait for August. This is going to be the trendy pick for a lot of people for Super Bowl out of the AFC. Mm. Not only did they spend the fourth most in the free agent market as any team, which is not Bengals football,
right,
this offseason, they bring back 11 starters on offense for an offense that was high-flying when Burrow was in there. All the turnover within the division, Ravens, Browns, Steelers, all new head coaches. The Bengals to be the stable situation, and Burrow being on site there at minicamp, there's a lot of reason to be optimistic about the Bengals.
There's also a lot of reason to doubt the Cincinnati Bengals, because just like Denny Green says, you want to crown them, then crown them. But they are who we thought they were. And the Cincinnati Bengals have proven to be exactly who we thought they were over the course of the last 3, 4, 5 years. They have barely made any postseasons at all, much less postseason runs with Joe Burrow, Ja'Marr Chase, T. Higgins, Trey Hendrickson, and some pretty darn good ancillary pieces. They don't have Trey Hendrickson anymore. They're hoping that their young defense can elevate, because last year they were not very good on defense. They were third to last, according to Pro Football Focus, 30th. On defense, 13th on offense, and a decent special teams unit for the Cincinnati Bengals. There's a lot of reason to doubt this team, and a lot of it has to do with the defensive side. If Joe Burrow's healthy, if Ja'Marr Chase and T. Higgins are out there, that offense is going to be top 10. No doubt about it, really. The running back unit could be better, but Chase Brown's a nice young player still and working his way up. And then defensively, they did spend a decent amount of money, brought in Brian Cook, brought in Boye Mafe, Dexter Lawrence, Jonathan Allen. That's really nice. You need to see them play together before we can anoint this team. And the most important part is that pass rush. How are they going to be at getting to the passer? Defense is going to be better. I would say it has to be at least in the teens, if not the top 15, to get them to the postseason and to make some noise when they're there. There's a lot of reason to doubt the Bengals. I'm not going to buy in just yet, but Peter Schrager there saying Cincinnati, a trendy Super Bowl pick in the AFC. Golf on the scorecard. The CJ Cup Byron Nelson begins on Thursday, runs through Sunday. Reminder, the U.S. Open approaching in mid-June. That opens on June 18th. In the tennis world, French Open around the corner May 23rd through June the 7th. And D1 softball Lincoln Super Regional action. 4-seeded Nebraska, home to 13th-seeded Oklahoma State. That action begins Thursday at 8 on ESPN2. Friday at 4, same place. Saturday game 3 if necessary. We'll be on ESPN 4 o'clock in the afternoon. D2 baseball, Augustana moving their way beyond the regional round to the super regionals. Those begin on Thursday. Augie will see Central Missouri Thursday, Friday, Saturday if necessary. Thursday at 5, Friday at 5, Saturday at 1 o'clock in the afternoon in a game 3 if necessary. Let's dive into your ReliaBank headline to the day. Hour number 1. Mariano Gomez has earned another all-region nod, this time as the D2 CCA All-Central Region first team honoree for Augustana Baseball. A pair of Viking softball players have been named to the D2 CCA All-Central Region squad team announced on Monday. Senior Andrea Kane and Desi Cuevas garnering her second D2 CCA honor in just her third season with Augustana. And they're not alone. South Dakota State right-hander Drew McDowell honored yesterday as the Quick Star Summit League Peak Pitcher of the Week for his performance in a May 13th victory over Omaha. The sophomore from Billings, Montana. McDowell pitched 6 no-hit innings as part of a combined shutout with Ty Madison as the Jackrabbits opened a 4-game series with a 5-0 victory. SDSU baseball 21-30. The record, they're seeded 4th for this week's upcoming Summit League Baseball Championship, and they will face off with top-seeded Oral Roberts noon tomorrow to kick off the double elimination tournament at Seibert Field on the University of Minnesota. Those are your Reliant Bank headlines of the day for hour number one. We'll dive into our first break. Come right back with more news and nuggets out of the NBA. The Nuggets are not in the Western Conference Finals. The Spurs have taken up that mantle from them and the T-Wolves. Victor Wembanyama stating his case in plain sight last night. Amazing transformational performance. We break that down. Latest NBA news to boot as well coming up next on this Tuesday, May 19th edition of Overtime right here on your Sioux Falls sports leader at ESPN 102.3 AM 1000 KSOO.
To get ESPN with the free app and online, grab your phone or call us up on your smart device. Now let's get you back to Overtime with Bert Ramin on ESPN 102.3 and AM 1000 KSOO.
Right back with you on this Tuesday, May 19th edition of Overtime. We are just getting off the ground on the show, and certainly last night felt a little bit different, didn't it? In the NBA, we saw a possible handing off of the torch from Shai Gilgeous-Alexander and the Thunder to the San Antonio Spurs and one Victor Wembanyama. A logo three for a 7.5 footer feels like a iconic moment, a changing of the guard moment. And yes, I'm overreacting. Everybody's overreacting around the water cooler today regarding what we saw last night. How do you feel about it, though? Is it time to go ahead and say Thunder are done for, move on over, it's the Spurs' time? I don't necessarily think so, and frankly, I hope not, because I want this series to be great. I would love for it to go the distance and have all the juice and be a 7-game series go either way and give us something to be really darn excited about heading into the offseason. Victor Wembanyama resisted the urge to dive deeply into the visual of watching Shai Gilgeous-Alexander accept an award he thought belonged to him just minutes before the biggest game of his NBA career. So on the night that SGA received his second MVP award, Wemby snatched a consolation prize with a double overtime victory on the road over SGA's Thunder that gave the Spurs a 1-0 edge in the Western Conference Finals. Wemby had 41 and 24, also had 3 blocks, and he became the youngest player in the history of the league at just 22 years and 134 days to record at least 40 and 20 in a playoff game. Was he trying to send a message? Here's what Wemby had to say. The message would be that we as a team are ready to go into any environment, any place, against anybody. Even though we still got a lot to learn, our effort should be over everyone else's. Tonight, we were relentless. The music blaring from the visitors' locker room at Paycom Center set the tone last night. San Antonio trailed by 3:27 seconds to go. That's when that aforementioned iconic deep three took place. Wemby with a big time yam later on in the double overtime period, solidifying that 122-115 victory. There's a lot of different angles here. And with these young teams, particularly in the NBA, you talk about, you know what, they got to pay their dues. They're inexperienced. They're going up against a team that's been there, done that, absurdly deep, built the right way, great defense, great coaching staff, star power, all blended together into a very fearsome opponent in OKC. And there's always a little bit of the element of, you know, this team's young, they score, they know how to play, that are exciting, like Detroit in the Eastern Conference. There's an element of that in every postseason of the NBA. Just ask the Cavaliers a couple years ago that had a great record. Pistons this year, great record. They bow out relatively early. For San Antonio, there's also a benefit of what you don't know and not knowing what you don't know here at this stage of we're supposed to lose games like this. We're supposed to get up against it and have the crowd take us out of it late in the contest and fade down the stretch. Hey, they played really hard game one, but not good enough. The Thunder have been there. They know how to weather a storm like that. Was not the case last night, and that's why I personally am hoping and buying into the Wemby storyline, the Wemby ascension into that particular role. Face of the NBA, generational talent, an absurdly unique body, but also an absurdly unique competitor, a guy that can do it in multitude of ways, barely has to jump to ram a basketball home in the cylinder, and makes very tall, absurdly tall humans like a Chet Holmgren, like a Bismack Biyombo that's on his own team, look like a kid, look like a small person, even though they're not. They're bigger than 95% of the population, but Wemby's a one percenter. And that was an amazing performance last night. And hopefully we can look back a year from now, 2 years from now, 5 years from now, a decade from now and say, do you remember that game where everything changed? May have been last night in Oklahoma City for Victor Wembanyama and the Spurs. On the other side, SGA speaking out after the loss last night, after being presented with that MVP trophy in the pregame ceremony. SGA didn't perform up to that lofty standard in a thrilling Western Conference Finals opener. SGA saying, we just have to be better, me in particular. He became the 14th player in NBA history to win back-to-back MVPs this week. I have to be better, especially against a team of this caliber. Nothing more than that. SGA went on to say, more than that, I know my teammates, what my teammates are capable of. We're capable as a team when we bring it. It's just unfortunate I wasn't able to bring my best game tonight, but that's how it goes sometimes. Sometimes you're your best version. Sometimes you're not. You got to roll with the punches. Don't get discouraged and stay true to who you are. So if you're buying into the reestablishment of that swag of OKC, the confidence, you're not alone. Vegas certainly thinks they're going to rebound. The spread is here for tomorrow night's game two. And OKC favored by 6.5 points. So yes, there's a lot of adulation and praise and changing of the guard talk for the Spurs today. And you expect this series to be really, really darn good. But the Spurs are a 6.5 point dog in game two following last night's double overtime 7-point win. The other game coming up tonight, game one in the East, Cavaliers are a 7.5 point dog on the road at MSG against the New York Knicks. That's the latest there as far as odds go. Wanted to throw in your NBA Finals odds to see how much those have changed. Of course, predictably, a big haircut in the odds for OKC. They're now just plus 125. The Spurs right there, plus 155. And you would imagine, barring a blowout in either direction, those numbers will stay relatively the same after game two. Vegas is expecting a game two win by a small number by OKC. If that happens, they win by 5 to 8 to 12 points. You would imagine the Spurs will still right there, nipping at the heels of OKC for the top spot. New York plus 475 and Cleveland is your long shot remaining at plus 2000 right now at DraftKings Sportsbook. That is the latest from the NBA. Always curious your opinion as well. Are you buying in to the changing of the guard talk last night? Was that a big time moment, a remember when moment we saw last night with Victor Wembanyama? Or are you pretty confident that the Thunder can storm back in the series for game number two tomorrow night? Calls always welcome, 605-362-3776. When we come back, it's your dedicated NFL news dump segment of the day. The Packers made another signing and a very interesting and cool story out of Green Bay coming up around the corner. And Iowa State Cyclone football, we'll start there with some troubling news out to the east in Ames for head coach Jimmy Rogers. That coming up next on a Tuesday, May 19th edition of Overtime, right here on ESPN 102.3 AM 1000 KSOO.
Overtime is in the middle of your workday. Unwrap your sandwich and get caught up with Burt Ramin on ESPN 102.3 and AM 1000 KSOO, Sioux Falls sports leader.
Right back with you on this Tuesday, May 19th edition of Overtime, your dedicated football segment of the day right now. We start out to our east in Ames, Iowa, home of the Iowa State Cyclones, head coach Jimmy Rogers, and they got some bad news at the running back position again as of yesterday. Iowa State running back Salahuddin Allah will miss the entire season with a torn Achilles. New coach Jimmy Rogers confirmed as much yesterday during his latest stop on the Cyclone tailgate tour. The loss of Allah in the backfield, a major blow for an offense that already entering the year was set to replace 96% of its rushing production. Notably, Abu Sama went up and transferred to the Wisconsin Badger football program. So they were already going to have some new faces and an infusion of talent in the backfield to help this offense go. And then in recent memory, we shared the story with you on the air here that recently another back, Jaden Jackson, youngster on the roster, no longer with the program. After turning in an impressive performance at the spring showcase scrimmage, there were a couple articles out discussing his performance, Coach Rogers' comment on it, and Maybe. We're splitting hairs here. We don't know the entire details because nobody does. Maybe it was hurt feelings. Maybe it was a complimentary role or something about the quality of his time there in Iowa State. I don't know. We're all speculating as to why Jaden Jackson stepped aside from the program in Ames, but he's out. And then Salahuddin Allah, who just recently tore his Achilles, that is two notable backs that could have been big contributors this year, down and out in one way or another in Ames for the Iowa State Cyclone football program. Allah recently transferred from Oregon State. He had 329 yards on 74 carries in 19 games over 2 years. Junior from Lamarck, Texas, was injured back in the spring, and Rogers said the Cyclones will have to looking to bring in one of the running backs still available in the transfer portal. There probably are many. Portal deadline to enter the portal was back in mid-January, and Cameron Pettaway is the name to watch. A standout kick returner who was a 2025 MAC Freshman of the Year at Bowling Green is the most experienced running back on the roster right now. Carried 72 times for 365 yards, 8 passes caught, 139 yards, 2 touchdowns last year. But the Iowa State Cyclones are scrambling, and it's not a good sign at this stage. A lot of this out of their control, but not a good sign at this stage to say, all right, we're through spring ball. We got one experienced back who's a transfer on the roster. We're going to have to go back into the portal, bring a couple of players, possibly, up to speed at that running back position there in Ames. Shifting gears now over to the National Football League. Massive news for the state of hockey in regards to becoming the state of football. The NFL expected to award the 2028 draft to Minneapolis during its quarterly meetings this week. According to ESPN's Adam Schefter, formal announcement likely to come Tuesday, following by a vote of the owners. Local organizers led by the Minnesota Sports and Events Commissions submitted a bid in March back for the event, which says the NFL has turned into a traveling off-season showcase. This year's draft in Pittsburgh drew a record 805,000 fans across 3 days of action. According to the league, an average 13.2 million viewers on TV and digital platforms. Weather in Minnesota can still be pretty darn cold when the draft is held in late April, and we'll wait and see. But 2028 draft, Minneapolis, very close to being confirmed by the National Football League as of today. You can view that article at ESPN.com. Let's talk about players that are away from their team respectfully at this time. Cardinals quarterback Jacoby Brissett continued his contract holdout yesterday as the club held its first OTA under new coach Mike LaFleur. LaFleur said discussions about a reworked deal for the upcoming season are, quote, same as where we were a few weeks ago. Added he's been in contact with Brissett but declined to go into further detail about the conversations. LaFleur pointed out that Monday's practice was voluntary. Brissett's experience will help him understand what the Cardinals are doing offensively under the first-time head coach. The only difference was the contrast in verbiage. The hardest thing to do in this league is to get used to the speed of the game, even not just for the rookie, but for second-year, third-year guy. Brissett has played a ton of football, probably done everything we've ever done schematically. It's just a little bit of different verbiage. So panic button, panic alarm, not on out there in Tempe, Arizona. And they have other options. They got a youngster in Carson Beck. They got another veteran in Gardner Minshew on the roster. But Jacoby Brissett holding out for a more market-valued contract in Arizona as the QB1 moving forward. Well, the next phase of the Browns offseason begins with OTAs, and the team's best player by a mile isn't there. Pro Football Talk noting that Browns defensive end, pass rusher, future gold jacket wearer Myles Garrett, the NFL's reigning defensive player of the year, isn't expected to participate in OTAs. Garrett did not participate last year. Mary Kay Cabot on the news, Cleveland.com. Garrett has proven he can still play at an elite level in the regular season without working with the team during the offseason. Garrett skipped last month's work. Browns coach Todd Monken said he hadn't spoken to Garrett and had only heard from him via text. It's fine. This is voluntary. We have other guys beside Miles that are not here. I wish they were. They'll be ready. We expect them to be ready, and we'll be fired up when they're here. Not great news out of Cleveland. You want your biggest stars there leading the program, paid what they're worth, which Garrett is paid what he's worth. Not a great sign, though, for the Cleveland Browns moving forward, although worth noting still the voluntary portion of offseason training activities. Cool story out of Green Bay. According to Pro Football Talk, the Packers bringing in an undrafted rookie late in the cycle with a backstory that makes him easy to root for. Marlon Jones, the name to know for you Packer fans, a cornerback from Vanderbilt who missed the entire 2024 season while battling cancer, is signing with Green Bay as of yesterday, according to Matt Zenitz of CBS Sports. Jones began his college career at Eastern Washington and was one of the best cornerbacks in the FCS level of the game before deciding to step up to a higher level of competition and transfer to Nashville and Vanderbilt University. But the day before he was going to move to Nashville in the spring of 2024, received a diagnosis of stage 3 Hodgkin's lymphoma, caused him to miss all of 2024 and 2025. He was in full remission. Didn't make a big impact last year, but certainly a name worth watching and a really cool story for the Green Bay Packers. Marlon Jones, the latest player to sign on with the green and gold as of yesterday. And more from Green Bay. You gotta love the fact that the Packers drafted a kicker. Really cool name, Trey Smack III. But what if I told you his backstory is pretty darn incredible as well? It wouldn't be the way it is right now for Trey Smack had COVID not happened. Smack was the only kicker picked in this year's NFL draft. He needed all three to nudge him towards football. The 6th-round pick from Florida didn't even consider playing football until he was a sophomore at Severna Park High School in Maryland. At that time, he played soccer and lacrosse. One of his teammates at the Maryland Crabs Lacrosse Club was Joe Stover, the son of former NFL kicker, notably with the Ravens, Matt Stover. One day after a Crabs practice, they were farting around with this football, and Joe came home and said, "Dad, you wouldn't believe how this Trey Smack kicks a football." Stover told ESPN in a phone interview the day after the Packers concluded their rookie minicamp, "I'm going, all right, who's Trey Smack?" Stover said. Stover realized his son was talking about one of his lacrosse teammates. He agreed to take a look. And then, of course, the rest is history. Smack has an NFL leg after the initial diagnosis from the former NFL kicker, Matt Stover. But the cooler story here is hearkening you back to the very frustrating, very tragic, very difficult year of 2020, and how things were back then. In his initial pressers with the Green Bay Packers, Stack really was very candid and honest about his early kicking career of a football. They locked up all the lacrosse goals in Maryland. So I was like, they can't take down the field goal post. So I started kicking, started doing my thing, and somehow I went to camp 9 months down the line and got ranked 13th in the nation. Less than a year later, he jumped to number one in the high school kicker rankings, and I was like, okay, maybe I should do this. Isn't it crazy the way you meet the moment, the way your life can weave around one small little decision or a circumstance that you find yourself in can change everything? Interesting stuff. Fun to root for. Trey Smack III, latest Packer kicker, would not be kicking at all if it wasn't for the tough circumstances of the COVID pandemic back in 2020. Gave up lacrosse and soccer to boot around the odd-shaped, orb-shaped football that he knows and loves now as the future kicker of the Packers. And the Packers have pretty much wiped clean the competition for Smack in camp. They still have Lucas Havrasik on the roster, but they did cut Brandon McManus just a couple of weeks ago, so Trey Smack likely to be the Packers' future at the place kicker position. The Broncos' future at running back is pretty cloudy, and they have added a new running back in the draft, Jonah Coleman, Broncos' 4th-round pick out of Washington last month. The 22-year-old is just 5'8", 220 pounds, but he averaged 5.5 yards per carry in 4 college seasons, 2 at Zona, 2 at Washington, and scored a combined 25 rushing touchdowns for the Huskies over the past 2 years. Denver's got no shortage of backs, and that's been the way the Broncos have handled since the Terrell Davis, Alandis Gary, Mike Anderson, Clinton Portis, Travis Henry, all sorts of guys in that long lineage, Shanahan into now Sean Payton. They got J.K. Dobbins. They got R.J. Harvey. They didn't need a pick this year, but they took one in the 4th round in Jonah Coleman. He comes in. A lot of work to do. A lot of ability for Jonah Coleman, and we'll see exactly where he slides in. A full featured article on the youngster up right now at ESPN.com. Other news from the NFL. Carolina Panthers head coach Dave Canales confirmed on Monday that defensive lineman Tershawn Wharton, former Chief, recently underwent neck surgery. Wharton expected to begin training camp on the PUP list. Canales said Wharton was recovering great. That's a quote from his surgery. But the coach didn't have a timetable for when he might be able to play. Basically, it was about a week and a half ago. He was just feeling a little discomfort and went in, talked to Panthers VP of Player Health and Performance, Denny Killington. And then he was like, this is something we should take a look at. Found some things that needed to be addressed from a surgical standpoint. And Tershawn Wharton, now in recovery from neck surgery, you'd say questionable for the start of the regular season along that Panther defensive line. Well, there might be former pass catchers and sometimes former defensive players that played with Aaron Rodgers that might not have been too kind about his demeanor and his caliber quality of a teammate. But I will say, honestly, I don't think of any quarterbacks out there that have anything disparaging to say with the proximity they have to the future Hall of Fame quarterback. Rodgers is back in the fold in Pittsburgh. And the new offensive coordinator, former Viking assistant Brian Angelico, is commenting on Rodgers' chops as a mentor. Veteran Mason Rudolph, second-year quarterback Will Howard, and rookie Drew Aller fill out the rest of the room. And Angelico saying, you can never have enough quarterbacks with the system that's in place here. It's great. We have four quarterbacks. We have a plan on how all of those guys are going to get reps. Aaron is such a great mentor. According to Angelico via Brooke Pryor of ESPN, he's very willing to help the players. I think that certainly is a big plus for us. And a big kudos to Aaron Rodgers, because as he found out firsthand, not every veteran quarterback is so willing to hand out free advice and free critiques and free areas of growth to youngsters like Brett Favre. Aaron Rodgers has been nothing but class with Jordan Love, Zach Wilson during his time in New York. Rodgers is a great teammate there to him. Can't speak about the other relationships on the roster. That's all speculation. But again, Zach Wilson, everybody else that's been in a quarterback room with Rodgers, nothing bad to say about the guy. At least nothing has come out just yet. Lastly, the New York Giants are waiting for a lot of injury recoveries. Jackson Dart took his lumps. Cam Scataboo working back. And of course, Malik Nabers working his way back from injuries. Update on Cam Scataboo, a local legend, a cult figure in the NFL these days. Scataboo's play, one of the few highlights of last year for the Giants, but the good feelings he generated during his rookie year were put on hold when he suffered a severe leg and ankle injury in October. Here's Scataboo talking about his rehab. Obviously, there's ups and downs in the injury process, coming back and rehabbing, but the mental battle has been the hardest part, making sure I trust it fully. I'm a little ways out, not too far, but I'll be ready to go week one. Good news for Cam Scataboo. And again, the bad news earlier this week was the reported cleanup procedure on the knee surgery of one Malik Nabers, who still had some lingering soreness and stiffness reportedly in that knee. So the Giants, big three on offense, young three, Dart, Scataboo, Malik Nabers, all of them dealing with different injuries and ailments heading into year number two there in New York. Cam Scataboo certainly a big-time playmaker for Big Blue. Lastly, from the National Football League, let's talk about best available and perfect fits for top free agents out there. Surprisingly, Tyreek Hill is not on this list. But the names that are out there are pretty darn robust. Stephon Diggs, Kevin Zeitler, Joey Bosa, Deebo Samuel, Taylor Decker, Jonnu Smith, Cam Jordan, who we told you there's an offer on the table with the New Orleans Saints. Also still out there, Bobby Wagner, Mekhi Becton, former number one overall pick, Jadeveon Clowney, former number two overall pick, Von Miller, and Nick Chubb, also still out on the open market. So there's a big article up at ESPN.com, and there's one player linked to Green Bay. We'll get to here in a moment, but first let's talk Stephon Diggs. Is he going to be welcome back in New England? I would put that at about 10% chance right now. And a lot of that hinges on whether or not the aforementioned confirmed, semi-confirmed trade for A.J. Brown goes through. If that goes through, I would be floored if Diggs has any shot at returning to Foxborough, especially the way that they have spent their money at wide receivers. Stephon Diggs' best fit, according to the article at ESPN.com, is a scary one for everybody except for the Rams. The L.A. Rams. Ravens could be a fit for Diggs, but I like him in L.A. Alongside Puka Nacua and Davante Adams, the Rams attempted 430 passes out of 11 personnel last year, which was the ninth most in the league. Diggs is a natural separator who can line up inside or outside. 85 catches last year for the New England Patriots, notes Matt Bowen of ESPN. Stephon Diggs to the Rams, that would be pretty darn impressive. And a top line older trio of wide receivers to pair with a very old quarterback, but a team that's ready to win right now out in L.A. Joey Bosa, edge rusher. How about this fit? This would be pretty cool. The San Francisco 49ers. Bosa has answered some availability questions over the last 2 years, playing in at least 14 games in each, and he fits well as a pass rusher, according to Bowen, in Raheem Morris's defense in San Francisco. Bosa played 36.3 snaps per game last year in Buffalo, had 5 sacks, 5 forced fumbles, and 42 pressures. Joey Bosa, Nick Bosa pairing in San Francisco would be pretty darn cool. Deebo Samuel, still on the open market as a do-it-all gadget wide receiver, running back extraordinaire. Samuel's best fit with the Indianapolis Colts, who have a big need at wide receiver. I think the Colts still could make a leap at Tyreek Hill, Deebo Samuel, maybe Stephon Diggs. They need additional bodies. They got Alex Pierce, who has paid a ton of money. They got Josh Downs, who has not really proven to be a middle-of-the-pack wide receiver too yet in his career. He's got the capability. We'll see. They've got Nick Westbrook-Ikhine and others, but Deebo Samuel, easily a fit and a name to watch with the Indianapolis Colts. And then the Green Bay Packers pass rush unit is Micah Parsons, and then a bunch of questions. Lucas Van Ness is a question that we kind of have the answer to. Is he going to be an all-pro gold jacket wearer someday? No. Could he develop into a decent, physical, edge-setting defensive end pass rusher? Yeah, you think he could. But the production so far for LVN has not been good. Packers also have the dentist, DDS, deny Dennis Sutton, the rookie out of Penn State, but rookies are never a sure thing as contributors early in their careers. They got Colin Oliver and many other names there that are in the just a guy variety. Baron Sorrell comes to mind for Green Bay, but maybe there's a fit still out there on the open market in the form of former Iowa Hawkeye A.J. Epinesa, former Bill, noted as a link to the Green Bay Packers, a long, powerful mover who can set the edge, 6'6", 260-pound frame, can also create disruptive plays under new coordinator Jonathan Gannon, recording 24.5 sacks and 4 picks in 6 seasons with the Bills. A.J. Epinesa, a free agent this offseason, if you recall, was linked to, was reportedly signing with the Cleveland Browns, but the medicals became a concern, a failed physical. Gets rid of that deal for A.J. Epinesa. Still on the open market. Packers are extraordinarily conservative physically with injuries of different kinds. We'll see if that comes to fruition. But Green Bay did get linked to A.J. Epinesa in that article. Lastly here, other fits. Bobby Wagner fitting in with the Jags. Jadeveon Clowney with the Lions. Always feels like Detroit's in need of a pass rusher. And lastly, don't like this. Von Miller somehow got 9.5 sacks last year, but he fits in with the Chicago Bears, according to the article at ESPN.com. You can view it on the NFL featured page, again, ESPN.com. There is your fill. College and pro football news here on a Tuesday. When we come back, already right back up to the top of the hour, headlines and highlights, more praise for Victor Wembanyama. If you have not seen it, if you didn't see it in person, check out the highlights from last night's game. Thank me later as the Spurs get by OKC double overtime. What is going to be an absurdly fun series. Double overtime win for San Antonio, 122-115 last night. We recap that and everything else you may have missed yesterday. Immediately next with headlines and highlights, NHL Final Four is set. Odds roundup in the good, the bad, and the ugly. Middle of the hour, and we conclude the Tuesday edition of Overtime, talking Twins and Timberwolves, and of course the Minnesota Wild with Darren Wolfson of KSTP in the Twin Cities. That's coming up at 12:40 as we move right along through this Tuesday edition of Overtime right here on your Sioux Falls Sports Leader.